From the Panopticon to Disney World, The Development of Discipline by Clifford D. Shearling and Philip C. Stenning. One of the most distinctive features of that quintessentially American playground known as Disney World is the way it seeks to combine a sense of the comfortable, even nostalgic familiarity, with an air of innovative technological advance. Mingled with the fantasies of one's childhood are the dreams of a better future. Next to the Magic Kingdom is Epcot Center. As well as providing for a great escape, Disney World claims to also be a design for better living. And what impresses most about this place is that it seems to run like clockwork. Yet the Disney Order is no accidental byproduct. Rather, it is a designed-in feature that provides, to the eye that's looking for it, but not to the casual visitor, an exemplar of modern private corporate policy. Along with the rest of the scenery, of which it forms a discrete part, it is too recognizable as a design for the future. We invite you to come with us on a guided tour of this modern police facility in which discipline and control are, like many of the characteristics one sees about, in costume. The fun begins the moment the visitor enters Disney World. As one arrives by car, one is greeted by a series of smiling young people who, with the aid of clearly visible road markings, direct one to one's parking spot, remind one to lock one's car and to remember its location, and then direct one to await the rubber-wheeled train that will convey visitors away from the parking lot. At the boarding location, one is directed to stand safely behind guardrails and to board the train in an orderly fashion. While climbing on board, one is reminded to remember the name of the parking area and row number in which one is parked. For instance, Donald Duck 1. Once on the train, one is encouraged to protect oneself from injury by keeping one's body within the bounds of the carriage and to do the same for children in one's care. Before disembarking, one is told how to get from the train back to the monorail platform, where to wait for the train in the parking lot on one's return. At each transition from one stage of one's journey to the next, one is wished a happy day and a good time at Disney World. This begins as one drives in and is directed by road signs to tune one's car radio to the Disney Radio Network. As one moves towards the monorail platform, the directions one has just received are reinforced by physical barriers that make it difficult to make a wrong turn. Pavement markings, signs, and more cheerful Disney employees, who like their counterparts in other locations, convey the message that Disney World is a fun place designed for one's comfort and pleasure. On approaching the monorail platform, one is met by enthusiastic attendants who quickly and efficiently organize the mass of people moving into the corrals designed to accommodate enough people to fill the compartment on the monorail. In assigning people to these corrals, the attendants ensure that groups visiting Disney World remain together. Access to the edge of the platform is prevented by a gate, which is open once the monorail has arrived and disembarked the arriving passengers on the other side of the platform. If there's a delay of more than a minute or two in waiting for the next monorail, one is kept informed of the reason for the delay and the progress the expecting train is making towards the station. Once aboard, the automatic doors of the monorail have closed. One is welcomed aboard, told to remain seated and, for one's own safety, to stay away from open windows. The monorail takes a circuitous route to one of the two Disney locations, the Epcot Center or the Magic Kingdom, during which time a friendly disembodied voice introduces one briefly to the pleasures of the world one is about to enter and the methods of transport available between its various locations. As the monorail slows towards its destination, one is told how to disembark once the automatic doors open and how to move from one station to the entrance gates and reminded to take one's possessions with one and to take care of oneself and children in one's care on disembarking. Once again, these instructions are reinforced in a variety of ways as one moves towards the gates. It will be apparent from the above that Disney Productions is able to handle large crowds of visitors in a most orderly fashion. Potential trouble is anticipated and prevented. Opportunities for disorder are minimized by constant instruction, by physical barriers which severely limit the choice of action available, and by the surveillance of omnipresent employees who detect and rectify the slightest deviation. The vehicles that carry people between locations are an important component of the system of physical barriers. Throughout Disney World, vehicles are used as barriers. This is particularly apparent at the Epcot Center, the newest Disney facility, where many exhibits are accessible only via special vehicles which automatically secure one once they begin moving. Control strategies are embedded in both the environmental features and structural relations. In both cases, control structures and activities have other functions which are highlighted so the control function is overshadowed. Nonetheless, control is pervasive. For example, virtually every pool, fountain, and flower garden serves both as an aesthetic object to direct visitors away from or towards particular locations. Similarly, every Disney Productions employee, while visibly and primarily engaged in other functions, is also engaged in the maintenance of order. This integration of functions is real and not simply an appearance. Duty is created, safety is protected, employees are helpful. The effect is, however, to embed the control function into the woodwork, where its presence is unnoticed but its effects are ever present. A critical consequence of this process of embedded control into other structures is that control becomes consensual. It is affected with the willing cooperation of those being controlled, so that the controlled become, as Foucault, 1977, has observed, the source of their own control. Thus, for example, the batching that keeps families together provides for family unity, while at the same time ensuring that parents will be available to control their children. By seeking a definition of order within Disney World that can be convincingly be presented as being in the interest of visitors, order maintenance is established as a voluntary activity, which allows coercion to be reduced to a minimum. Thus, adult visitors willingly submit to a variety of devices that increase the flow of consumers through Disney World, such as being corralled at the monorail platform, so as to ensure the safety of their children. Furthermore, while doing so, they gratefully acknowledge the concern Disney Productions has for the family, thereby legitimating its authority, not only in the particular situation in question, but in others as well. Thus, while profit ultimately underlies the order Disney Productions seeks to maintain, it is pursued in conjunction with other objectives that will encourage the willing compliance of visitors in maintaining Disney profits. This approach to profit-making, which seeks a coincidence of corporate and individual interests, employee and consumer alike, extends beyond the control function and reflects a business philosophy to be applied to all corporate operations. Peters and Waterman, 1982. The coercive edge of Disney's control system is seldom far from the surface, however, and becomes visible the moment the Disney visitor consensus breaks down. That is, when a visitor attempts to exercise a choice that is incompatible with the Disney order. It is apparent in the physical barriers that forcefully prevent certain activities, as well as in the actions of employees who detect breaches of order. This can be illustrated by an incident that occurred during a visit to Disney World by Shearing and his daughter, during the course of which she developed a blister on her heel. To avoid further irritation, she removed her shoes and proceeded to walk barefoot. They had not progressed 10 yards before they were approached by a very personable security guard dressed as a Bahamian police officer, with white pith helmet and white gloves that perfectly suited the theme of the area where they were moving through, so that he, at first, appeared more like a scenic prop than a security person, who informed them what walking barefoot was, for the safety of visitors, not permitted. When informed that, given the blister, the safety of this visitor was likely to be better secured by remaining barefoot, at least on the walkways, they were informed that their safety and how best to protect it was a matter for Disney Productions to determine while they were on Disney property, and then unless they complied, they'd been compelled to escort them out of Disney World. Shearing's daughter, on learning that failure to comply with the security guard's instructions would deprive her of the pleasures of Disney World, quickly decided that she would prefer to further injure her heel and remain on Disney property. As this example illustrates, the source of Disney Productions power rests both in the physical coercion it can bring to bear and its capacity to induce cooperation by depriving visitors of a resource they value. The effectiveness of the power that control of a fun place is vividly illustrated in the incredible queues of visitors who patiently wait, sometimes for hours, for admission to exhibits. These queues not only call into question the common knowledge that queuing is a quintessentially English pastime, if Disney World is in any indication, Americans are at least good, if not better, at it, but provides evidence of the considerable inconvenience that people can be persuaded to tolerate so long as they believe that their best interests require it. While the source of this perception is the image of Disney World that visitor brings to it, interestingly, it is reinforced through the queuing process itself. In many exhibits, queues are structured so that one is brought close to the entrance at several points, thus periodically giving one a glimpse of the fun to come, while at the same time encouraging one that the wait will soon be over. Visitor participation in the production of order within Disney World goes beyond the more obvious control examples we've noted so far. An important aspect of the order Disney Productions attempts to maintain is a particular image of Disney World and the American industrialist who sponsors exhibits, General Electric, Kodak, Kraft Foods, etc. Considerable care is taken to ensure that every feature of Disney World reflects a positive view of the American way, especially its use of and reliance on technology. Visitors are, for example, exposed to an almost constant stream of directions by employees, robots in human form or in disembodied recorded voices. The use of recorded messages in robots permits precise control over content and tone of the directions given that convey the desired message. Disney World acts as a giant magnet, attracting millions of Americans and visitors from other lands who pay to learn of the wonders of American capitalism. Visitors are encouraged to participate in the production of Disney Image while they are in Disney World and to take it home with them so they can reproduce it for families and friends. One way this is done is through the picture spots, marked with signposts that can be found throughout Disney World that provide direction with respect to the images to capture on film, with cameras that one can borrow free of charge, for the slideshows and photo albums to be prepared back at home. Each spot provides views which exclude anything unsightly, such as garbage containers, so as to ensure that the visual images visitors take away from Disney World will properly capture Disney's order. A related technique is that Disney characters who wander through the complex to provide photo opportunities for young children. These characters apparently never talk to visitors, and the reasons for this is presumably so their media-based images will not be spoiled. As we have hinted throughout this discussion, training is a pervasive feature of the control system of Disney Productions. It is not, however, the redemptive soul training of the Carousel Project, but an ever-present flow of directions for and definitions of order directed at every visitor. Unlike carousel training, these messages do not require detailed knowledge of the individual. They are, on the contrary, for anyone and everyone. Messages are, nonetheless, often conveyed to single individuals or small groups of friends and relatives. For example, in some of the newer exhibits, the vehicles that take one through the swivel and turn so that one's gaze can be precisely directed. Similarly, each seat is fitted with individual sets of speakers that talk directly to one, thus permitting a seductive sense of intimacy while simultaneously imparting a uniform message. In summary, within Disney World, control is embedded, preventative, subtle, cooperative, and apparently non-coercive and consensual. It focuses on categories, requires no knowledge of the individual, and employs pervasive surveillance. Thus, although disciplinary, it is distinctively non-carceral. Its order is instrumental and determined by the interests of Disney Productions rather than moral and absolute. As anyone who has visited Disney World knows, it is extraordinarily effective. While this new instrumental discipline is rapidly becoming a dominant force in social control, as it is different from the Orwellian totalitarian nightmare, as it is from the carceral regime, surveillance is pervasive, but is the antithesis of the blatant control of the Orwellian state. Its source is not government, and its vehicle is not Big Brother. The order of instrumental discipline is not the unitary order of central state, but diffuse and separate orders defined by private authorities responsible for the feudal-like domains of Disney World, condominium estates, commercial complexes, and the like. Within contemporary discipline, control is as fine-grained as Orwell imagined, but its features are very different. It is thus, paradoxically, not to Orwell's socialist-inspired utopia that we must look for a picture of contemporary control, but to the capitalist-inspired disciplinary model conceived by Huxley, who in his Brave New World painted a picture of consensually based control that bears a striking resemblance to the disciplinary control of Disney World and to the other corporate control systems. Within Huxley's imaginary world, people are seduced into conformity by pleasures offered by the drug Soma, rather than coerced into compliance by the threat of Big Brother, just as people are today seduced to conform by the pleasures of consuming the goods that corporate power has to offer. The contrast between morally based justice and instrumental control, carceral punishment and corporate control, are the panopticon and Disney World, and Orwell's and Huxley's visions are succinctly captured by the novelist Beryl Bainbridge's observations about the recent journey she made retracting J.B. Priestley's celebrated trip around Britain. She notes how during his travels in 1933, the center of the cities and towns he visited were defined by either a church or a center of government, depicting the coalition between church and state in the production of order that characterizes morality-based regimes. During her more recent trip, one of the changes that struck her most forcibly was the transformation that had taken place in the center of cities and towns. These were now identified not by churches or town halls, but by shopping centers, often vaulted glass roof structures that she found reminiscent of the cathedrals that had placed both their awe-inspiring architecture and the hush that she found they sometimes created. What was worshipped in these contemporary cathedrals, she noted, was not an absolute moral order, but something more mundane. People were worshipping shopping, and through it, we would add, the private authorities, the order and corporate powers their worship makes possible.